to the reading of the Globe Gazette for November 17th, 2020. I'm your reader, Anna. Clear Lake Schools to partner with Atura. Board of Education picks architecture firm for multiple projects by Ashley Stewart. The Clear Lake Community School District is moving forward with three projects included in its multi-million dollar referendum. The Clear Lake Board of Education unanimously approved a contract with Atura Architecture on Tuesday, November 10th, to design and oversee the construction of its new gym vestibule area, collaborative learning spaces, and parking lot. Atura Architecture proposed fees of 7.15% for the best vestibule area, 8.25% for the collaborative learning spaces, and 5.5% for the parking lot projects. Quote, it's all based on the amount of work that they put into it, the scope of it, and so on and so forth, unquote, by Doug Gee, Clear Lake Community School District Superintendent. The projects, which are part of the $18 million bond referendum voters approved in March, are estimated to cost between $1 million and $1.5 million, $700,000 and $500,000 respectively, he said. The school board's action came nearly a month after it decided to continue working with the Clear Lake architecture firm. Atura Architecture, a full-service architecture firm, has a 13-member team, including five architects, according to its website. It has a secondary location in Ankeny. The district hired Atura Architecture for the Clear Creek Elementary Secure Entrance, Lions Field Athletic Complex, and Wellness Center projects, which are also funded by the bond referendum. In March, the school board approved an architect contract with Atura for the Wellness Center, which is being done in collaboration with the City of Clear Lake. Atura proposed a fee of 6.85% of the first cost of the project, with a cap of $700,000 for the school's portion of the project and $70,000 for the city's portion. The project was awarded to Dean Snyder Construction of Clear Lake in August for about $10.6 million, and construction began on August 31st. The Wellness Center is scheduled to be substantially completed in December 2021. He said if the district was paying 7 or 8% for all the referendum projects Atura Architecture has helped the district design, it cost more than doing a project-by-project fee. The architect has been very good to us, Gee said. Quote, they're not charging the same because some projects require more work than others, unquote. Gee said the projects will be bid separately, starting with the gym vestibule, then the collaborative spaces and the parking lot. Quote, we feel we'll get better bids that way, unquote, he said. It's the district's goal to have the gym vestibule and collaborative learning spaces bid no later than January so they can be completed during the summer of 2021. Ashley Stewart covers Clear Lake and arts and entertainment in North Iowa for the Globe Gazette. Governor issues mask mandate. Reynolds orders new restrictions in wake of rising virus spread by Ryan J. Foley. This comes from Iowa City, Associated Press. With Iowa hospitals filling up and schools closing classrooms, Republican Governor Kim Reynolds dropped her longtime opposition to a statewide mask mandate and enacted a limited version of one Monday. A proclamation signed by the governor requires everyone 2 or older to wear masks when in public, indoor spaces within 6 feet of others who aren't members of their households for 15 minutes. Reynolds also limited many indoor gatherings to no more than 15 people and outdoor gatherings to 30, including family get-togethers. She declared that bars and restaurants cannot stay open for in-person service past 10 p.m., and she suspended all youth and adult sports and recreational activities, except for high school sports, college, and professional sports. Reynolds announced the steps in a televised speech. She said they would not be easy or popular, but that they were necessary to fight a virus that was threatening to overwhelm the state's healthcare system. This is a breaking news update. Associated Press's earlier story follows below. Hospitals filled up, public schools closed classrooms, the state sought emergency help with contact tracing, and most inmates at a large prison were infected as the coronavirus raged across Iowa on Monday. One in every 100 residents in Iowa received a COVID-19 diagnosis in the week that ended Sunday, even as others reported delays in getting tests or were awaiting results. That was the third worst rate in the nation, according to the data from Johns Hopkins University. A record 1,510 people infected with COVID-19 were hospitalized statewide after another surge of new patients was reported Monday evening, The number hospitalized doubled in 2 weeks and was expected to increase further in coming days after a surge of infections. It included 130 people fighting for their lives on ventilators. University of Iowa hospitals and clinics in Iowa City, the state's premier hospital, was, quote, very full, unquote, and making adjustments to free up beds for the most critically ill patients, a spokeswoman said Monday. The hospital added 10 intensive care beds on Monday. The Public Health Department for Polk County, the largest in the state, reported over the weekend that hospitals in the Des Moines metropolitan area are also nearing their limits. Quote, we cannot stress enough how alarming and urgent the situation has become for hospitals and their healthcare workers, unquote, the department said in a statement. Staffing was a particular concern as more workers are in isolation or quarantine due to community spread and others are exhausted from months of work fighting the pandemic. Hospitals are limiting procedures in order to preserve bed capacity and transferring patients elsewhere when necessary, said Iowa Hospital Association President Kirk Norris. Some urban hospitals are looking to rural hospitals to accept transfers, he said. Quote, the Iowa hospital community message is that we're here, open, and prepared to care for all, but we need everyone's help to stem this current tide of COVID-19, unquote, Norris said. Republican Governor Kim Reynolds said she would announce, quote, new steps to fight the virus, unquote, in a speech Monday night. She is facing growing pressure to issue a statewide mask mandate and to put limits on restaurants, bars, and other gathering places where the virus has spread. The Iowa Department of Public Health issued an emergency request for proposals on Monday seeking a contractor to conduct contact tracing and case investigation services. The department announced that proposals were due Tuesday, saying outside help was needed quickly, quote, due to the steady increase in state case volume, unquote, that has overwhelmed its resources. On Tuesday, Iowa is expected to hit the grim milestone of 2,000 deaths since the beginning of the pandemic. It took 5 months for the state to reach 1,000 deaths in August, and then 3 months to double, now with an average of 20 deaths per day. For thousands of public school students, Monday marked the beginning of taking virtual classes from their homes. Several of the largest districts, including those in Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, and Davenport, received waivers from the state last week to close in-person instruction for at least 2 weeks. Statistically, the situation was most dire in three rural counties that house state prisons where the virus has spread among inmates and staff. In Jones County, 741 inmates at the Anamosa State Penitentiary have tested positive, roughly 3 out of every 4 incarcerated there, according to the Iowa Department of Corrections. State prisons in Clarinda and Rockwell City were reporting hundreds more cases among inmates, including a majority of their populations. Dozens of employees at the prisons were also infected. The department announced that 2 more inmates died of complications after contracting the virus, 72-year-old Gene Edward Dreyer and 59-year-old Jonathan Strain. Dreyer had been an inmate at Clarinda and Strain had been an inmate at Anamosa. Both died at University of Iowa hospitals and clinics, where they'd been transferred after their health declined. Hancock County COVID cases rising. Emergency coordinator says fall surge worse than anticipated, by Rob Hillsland. Like in many counties in Iowa, Hancock and Winnebago are seeing a significant rise in the number of COVID-19 cases. On Monday, Hancock and Winnebago County's emergency management coordinator, Andy Buffington, informed Hancock County supervisors of a large rise in COVID-19 cases in their counties. Buffington reported 682 COVID-19 cases and a 37% caseload increase in the past 3 weeks. Buffington noted that the 12-county region that includes Winnebago and Hancock County has seen a rise from 39 hospitalizations 2 weeks ago to 85 presently, along with a 24% daily positivity rate for testing. Quote, hospitals are full and seeing surges in patients, and there has been increased testing, unquote, said Buffington. Quote, the numbers keep going way up across the state. It likely will get worse, and some, unfortunately, could perish, unquote. Buffington noted that the Garner-Hayfield-Ventura School District has gone to a hybrid learning plan, and the West Hancock School District is looking into something similar. He said the county will be supportive of schools' local-level decisions, noting that school and youth athletics are being increasingly impacted by the outbreak and more stringent state guidelines. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds' November 10th COVID-19 proclamation continues the requirement that those attending any social community, recreational, leisure, or sporting gatherings must maintain 6 feet distancing from other groups. It now also requires that groups are limited to 8 people unless the entire group is from the same household. Additionally, all gatherings that occur indoors with more than 25 people or outdoors with more than 100 people are prohibited unless all participants over 2 years old wear masks except when eating and drinking. In addition, at an indoor youth sporting or recreational gathering, only 2 spectators are permitted per youth athlete. Buffington contended the schools are doing a good job in Hancock County with the aid of some effective contact tracing, but he noted that he does not know where this outbreak is headed. Quote, "The fall surge came true and it is worse than anticipated," said Buffington, noting a lack of contact tracing resources in counties across the state. He stated that the state of Iowa has assumed contact tracing for 49 Iowa counties, with Hancock County not being among these counties. Hancock County currently has just 2 contract tracing personnel, which Buffington described as, quote, "stretched beyond capacity to do good and thorough contract tracing," unquote. He recommended that Hancock County officials increase hand sanitizing by providing hand sanitizing stations and signage to remind people to wash hands and recommend masks when going inside county buildings. It was noted that Hancock County has several small hand sanitizing stations that were provided by the Britt Lumberyard, which can be very effective in helping to combat the virus. Buffington said that it is critical that people isolate themselves if they are not feeling well and urged employers in the county to be innovative in working around the financial consequences of sick employees not coming to work. Quote, "It is likely individuals that are going to make the most difference," unquote, said Buffington. Quote, "There is no silver bullet at this point. I haven't seen a government order to be really successful to date," unquote. Buffington stated that a vaccine still appears to be at least months away and noted it remains to be seen how effective any vaccine may be. Rob Hillsland is community editor for the Summit Tribune. Reagan named whip for Iowa Democrats. State Senator from Mason City will be her party's number 2, by Jared McNett. On Sunday, Iowa Senate Democrats got together to choose their leadership for the forthcoming 2021 legislative session. For the top of the slate, Senate Democrats chose first-term State Senator Zach Walls of Coralville as minority leader. Second-in-command as minority whip will be State Senator Amanda Reagan, who represents the Mason City area. Quote, "I am honored to have been elected Senate minority whip for the state session of the Iowa legislature. The trust my colleagues have placed in me is very gratifying," unquote, Reagan said via email. Quote, "I consider it a privilege to represent my North Iowa constituents in the Iowa Senate and will continue to work hard to find solutions to their concerns in 2021, unquote. Reagan was previously chosen as a minority whip in 2016 when Rob Hogg, an attorney from Cedar Rapids, was tapped to Iowa Senate Democrats. Along with Walls and Reagan, Iowa Democrats selected 5 assistant leaders for the 2021 session: Nate Bolton of Des Moines, Bill Dotzler of Waterloo, Pam Jokum of Dubuque, Herman Kornbach of Ames, and Jackie Smith of Sioux City. During the Sunday session, Walls addressed results for the party in recent elections and where Iowa Democrats need to go. Quote, "It's clear that the Democratic Party has some work to do in terms of rebuilding our institutions and winning some tough races. So even though we held even as a team, you were really focused on making sure that we can get back to our majority and we have a government that's working for everyday Iowans," unquote, Walls said. Jared McNett covers local government for the Globe Gazette. This is a section in the paper from Mercy One, stating, "We're here for you. Nowhere to go. Follow this guide to streamline your Mercy One visit. I have COVID-19 symptoms. Call your primary provider to determine if a telemedicine visit is needed with a rapid test, or I have other urgent health issues or minor injuries. Call your primary provider first or go to Mercy One Regency Family Medicine Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. If it's a Saturday or Sunday, go to Mercy One Mason City Urgent Care for any urgent care or COVID-19 related needs." Again, this is by Mercy One. Charles City Looking for Residents, Holiday Decorations, by Jared McNett. For all intents and purposes, the holidays are here. So to celebrate the season, the Charles City Chamber of Commerce is doing some recruiting. According to press release, the Chamber is promoting quote, December nights and dazzling lights, unquote, which is a community-wide effort to decorate for the holiday season. Quote, there is no cost to be a part of this holiday driving tour around town, which will run December 4th through 31st and is intended simply to have fun and raise everyone's spirits, unquote, the release said. Charles City Tourism and Marketing Coordinator Ginger Williams called the effort a good way to be a part of the community and also see some sights. Quote, who doesn't enjoy a good holiday display, whether it's creating one or driving around and checking out the sights, she asked, unquote. Decorations are up to individuals and any home business or organization can participate. Those who agree to take part will then be placed on a list of addresses and promoted as part of the holiday driving tour. Awards will also be handed out for the categories of Best Classic Christmas Display, Best Single Decoration, Best Decorated Tree Visible from the Street, Most Original Display, and Most Dazzling Light Display. Funderman recognized for 25 years with Clear Lake Chamber. Trish Funderman has celebrated a milestone at the Clear Lake Area Chamber of Commerce. Funderman, Special Projects Director, has been with the Chamber for 25 years, the organization posted on its Facebook page Monday morning. Quote, her impact on Clear Lake is immeasurable, unquote, the Chamber said. Signature Clear Lake Chamber events like Thursdays on Main, TRI Clear Lake, Harvest Festival, and Christmas by the Lake started during her tenure. Quote, as our events director, Trish works tirelessly behind the scenes to keep Clear Lake hopping all year, unquote, the Chamber posted. Quote, Trish, thank you for your 25 years of passion and dedication, unquote. Mercy One North Iowa expands its rapid COVID-19 testing by Jared McNett. Residents across North Iowa will now have a few more options for rapid COVID-19 testing during the pandemic. Mercy One North Iowa announced in a press release on Monday that several medical center locations in the area will now offer rapid COVID-19 testing for symptomatic patients with the results in as few as 20 minutes. That said, the release made it clear that walk-in testing is not available and that patients need to go through primary care providers first. Quote, individuals experiencing COVID-19 related symptoms must contact their primary care provider to schedule an in-person or telehealth visit to determine if COVID-19 testing is appropriate, unquote, the release said. As of now, according to the release, such testing can be set up through the following medical centers: Clear Lake Family Medicine, Clear Lake Pediatric and Adolescent Care, Forest City Family Medicine, Forest Park Family Medicine, Green Family Medicine, Mason City Pediatric and Adolescent Care, Northwood Family Medicine, Rockford Family Medicine, Regency Family Medicine, and Sheffield Family Medicine. Rapid testing is also available at Community Health Center Mason City, Community Health Center Fort Dodge, and Waypoint Medical in Clear Lake. Pritchard retains leadership role. Iowa House Dems stay course despite losing 6 seats by James Q. Lynch. Despite losing 6 seats in an election when they were expected to make gains, perhaps even win control of the Iowa House, Democrats re-elected Minority Leader Todd Pritchard for the 2021 legislative session. Quote, it's a long game, unquote, second-term Representative Jennifer Confrunst of Windsor Heights explained Saturday after a virtual caucus of the 41 House Democrats. She will join Pritchard in leadership as the Democratic whip. Quote, we'd have liked it to be a little shorter, unquote. Republicans increased their numbers in the House from 53 to 59 and maintained a 32-18 majority in the Senate. With GOP Governor Kim Reynolds, Republicans will continue their trifecta control of the state house for another 2 years. Democrats ran good candidates and campaigns, quote, but we came up short, unquote, Pritchard said. Quote, I am really proud of the effort that House Democratic candidates have waged in the campaigns that they ran. I think we had people who ran for a lot of the right reasons because they care about their community. They care about their friends and their neighbors, he said, unquote. However, factors beyond their control and the control of the party may have overwhelmed that passion and those ideas, he suggested. President Donald Trump, who carried the state 53% to 45%, had an, quote, upward effect, unquote, on the election outcome in Iowa, Pritchard said in an earlier interview. So although he's disappointed in the outcome, quote, we're not disheartened, we're not giving up, unquote. Quote, we know that a lot of Iowans are depending on us to be their advocate, Pritchard said. That's why we're here fighting, unquote. Speaking from personal experience, Conferenced said sometimes candidates have to run more than once to get elected. As an example, she pointed to Eric Gerd of Cedar Rapids, who lost to an incumbent 2 years ago, but won an open seat race earlier this month. Quote, we're not done with these folks, unquote, she said about unsuccessful candidates. Democrats will be pushing the GOP majority to take action on the coronavirus pandemic, Pritchard said. Numbers have been rising with more than 180,000 cases of COVID-19 and nearly 2,000 deaths. Quote, we know that until we are able to get control of the pandemic and people are safe again and feel safe, that life really won't go back to normal and the economy of Iowa will not move forward like it should, unquote, said Pritchard, a Charles City attorney. Quote, so we're really focused on recovery and getting through the pandemic, unquote. Conference called on Reynolds to adopt the White House COVID-19 task force guidelines as a, quote, bare minimum, unquote. There's also a need for more testing and more and better data on COVID-19 in Iowa, she said. Quote, so there are policy implications and things that we're going to be working on, she said. But meanwhile, we don't have time to wait. We obviously have a tough winter ahead, and getting the right information is going to be key for how we can really get this under control, unquote. House Democrats also elected 4 assistant minority leaders for the 2021 sessions. Representative Brian Meyer of Des Moines, Lindsey James of Dubuque, Charlie McConkie of Council Bluffs, and Gerd. He is one of 4 new members joining House Democrats. The others are Sue Cahill of Marshalltown, Christina Bohannon of Iowa City, and Steve Hansen of Sioux City, who previously served in the legislature. The 2021 session is scheduled to open January 11th. Ex-Senator Jepsen dies. Republican served 1 term in D.C. representing Iowa. Iowa former U.S. Senator Roger Jepsen, who represented Iowa in Washington, D.C. in the early 1980s, has died. The 91-year-old Republican died Friday at a hospice facility in Bettendorf, Iowa, according to the Ruenage Mortuary in Davenport. U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley said Jepsen served the state well during his single term in the Senate from 1979 to 1985. While in Congress, Jepsen led the Joint Economic Committee of Congress and served on the Armed Services and Agriculture Committees, according to the Quad City Times. After losing his reelection bid to Democrat Tom Harkin, Jepsen was appointed chairman of the National Credit Union Administration Board and helped oversee more than 14,000 credit unions nationwide from 1985 until 1993. Jepsen also served as Iowa's lieutenant governor from 1968 to 1972 under Governor Robert Ray and then ran against Ray during the primary in 1972. He had also previously served as an Iowa state senator and a Scott County supervisor. Jepsen served in the U.S. Army in 1946 and 1947 before continuing in the Army Reserve from 1948 to 1960. Jepsen, who was born in Cedar Falls, Iowa, earned his bachelor's and master's degrees from Arizona State University before returning to his home state of Iowa. This is from the section Capitol Digest, a roundup of state government and Capitol news items of interest from Monday. Contact tracers sought. Officials with the State Department of Public Health are seeking qualified vendors to provide COVID-19 contact tracing and case investigation services. State officials say the emergency procurement is needed because of the, quote, exponential increase, unquote, in the COVID-19 case volume to provide additional resources to assist with coronavirus contact tracing and case investigation. The state's request for proposal process will be expedited and will seek to procure an emergency contract with an anticipated start date within 7 calendar days after the announcement of the award. Interested vendors will be asked to establish a team assigned to investigate COVID-19 cases and trace the contacts each affected person had with guidance from the health agency. Teams will be expected to work 7 days a week between 9 a.m. and 8:30 p.m. and provide a daily progress report to the state agency, including daily summaries of the number of cases investigated and contacts traced. Team members should, on average, complete 3 case investigations or 6 contact notifications per hour, according to the state's specifications. Proposals from interested vendors are due by 11:59 p.m. November 17th. 2 more inmates die. Officials with the State Department of Corrections announced Monday that 2 prison inmates have died, likely due to complications related to COVID-19 and other pre-existing medical conditions. You are listening to the reading of the Globe Gazette for November 17th, 2020 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Julie Ann Steinberg, May 3rd, 1969, November 15th, 2020. Clear Lake. Julie Ann Steinberg, 51, of Clear Lake, died Sunday, November 15th, 2020, at her home surrounded by family. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, November 21st, 2020, at Redeemer Lutheran Church, 301 South Main Street, Ventura, with Reverend Jesse Burns officiating, where masks will be required. Burial will be at St. Paul Lutheran Cemetery in Whitmore, Iowa. The funeral will be live streamed on Redeemer Lutheran Church's Facebook page and posted on Julie's tribute. Visitation will be held from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Friday, November 20th, 2020, at Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, 310 First Ave North, Clear Lake. Families suggest memorial contributions to the Glioblastoma Foundation. Julie was given life by her creator and was born on May 3, 1969, the daughter of Tom and Carol Zimmerman Burtis in Algona. She received the gift of holy baptism on June 22, 1969, and became a child of God. In March 1983, she publicly confessed her faith and was confirmed. She received the precious gift of the Lord's life-giving body and blood. She graduated from Algona High School in 1987. On November 7, 1998, she received the precious gift of a beloved companion in her spouse, Bruce. She was blessed with the gift of a child in her son, James. God blessed Julie's life with many special people as she served God in her vocations at home, church, work, and community. Julie was diagnosed with a glioblastoma brain tumor in June 2018. On November 15th, the Lord blessed Julie with a holy death and took her home to rest in the arms of Jesus. Julie and Bruce moved to Clear Lake in 1999 and opened North Iowa Collision Center in Clear Lake. She remained very active in Clear Lake on the City Council, Central Gardens, Clear Lake Art Center, and many other organizations. Julie enjoyed snowmobiling in Wyoming and traveling to Sanibel Island, Florida for seashells. She also liked playing with her dogs, gardening, photography, and cooking. Richard L. Ryman, October 19, 1945, November 14, 2020. Richard Lee Ryman, 75, of Mason City, died Saturday, November 14, 2020, at Mercy One North Iowa Medical Center in Mason City. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, November 19, 2020, at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street, Northeast Mason City, with Pastor Gary Whirling and Pastor Wendy Musgrave officiating. Burial will be at Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery in Mason City. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, November 18, 2020, at the funeral home in Mason City. Due to COVID-19, masks are required at the funeral home. Condolences can be sent to the family at 827 15th Street Southeast, Mason City, Iowa, 50401. Richard was born October 19, 1945, the son of High and Marie Weaverling Ryman in Charles City. He married Corey Drawla on June 18, 1966, at the Eden Presbyterian Church in rural Rudd, Iowa. Richard grew up and attended school in Osage. He worked most of his career as a maintenance supervisor for several companies in the area, including Cole Sewell, Pella Windows, before retiring. Richard was a member of Our Savior's Lutheran Church, Moose Lodge, and a founding member of the North Iowa Road Riders. He enjoyed camping, riding his motorcycle, growing his rose garden, and completing many home improvement projects. More than anything, he cherished all the time spent with his family and friends. Linda K. Jones, December 21st, 1950, November 14th, 2020. Linda K. Jones, 69, passed away peacefully on November 14th, 2020, at Beacon Place in Greensboro, North Carolina. Linda was born in Mason City, Iowa, on December 21st, 1950. Linda worked as a nurse's aide at many different locations around the world. As a military spouse, Linda put service before self. While she traveled with her husband during his time serving in the military, she never met a stranger. She was enormously proud of her husband's service to his country. Linda's passion for sitting out on the front porch and watching her husband plant and prune flowers and work in the garden. She loved taking long drives and looking at all the nature. Linda enjoyed going to the farmer's market and getting ice cream and talking with the vendors. The Triad Park and Field of Honor was a place she enjoyed going to. She would sit by the waterfall and read the monuments with her husband, Lenny. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Beacon Place at Athora Care Collective in Greensboro, North Carolina. James L. DeMuth. James Leonard DeMuth, 74, of Clarion, passed away Thursday, November 12, 2020 at Mercy One Des Moines Medical Center. A memorial mass for James DeMuth will be held on Saturday, November 28, 2020 at 10:30 a.m. at St. John's Catholic Church at 608 2nd Ave Northeast in Clarion, with Father Jerry Blake officiating. Burial will be held at Evergreen Cemetery in Clarion. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday, November 27, 2020 at Ewing Funeral Home, 1801 Central Ave East in Clarion. Those in attendance are required to wear a face mask and practice social distancing. Charles Scott Buddy Seifert. Charles Scott Buddy Seifert, 89, of Mason City, Iowa, died on Sunday, November 15, 2020 at Good Shepherd Nursing Home. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, a private family celebration of life will be held at a later date. Jerome Jerry Coolidge. Jerome Jerry Coolidge, 60, of Mason City, passed away on November 14, 2020 at Good Shepherd Health Center in Mason City due to long-term health issues and COVID-19. Per Jerry's wishes, there will not be a funeral. Todd G. Vierkant, 56, of rural Sheffield, passed away Tuesday, November 10th, 2020 at his home. A graveside service will be held at 1:30 p.m. Wednesday, November 18th, 2020 at the Goodell Cemetery, Goodell, Iowa, with Pastor Brian Resendez officiating. Todd was born July 14th, 1964 in Kansas City, Missouri. He was adopted by Harm and Ruth Schultz Vierkant. Todd attended Sheffield schools. Todd was preceded Beth E. Enright. Beth Elaine Enright, 61, of Mason City, died Sunday, May 24, 2020, at her home surrounded by family. Per Beth's wishes, her body has been cremated and a visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, November 20, 2020, at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street, Northeast, Mason City. Now for sports. Bulls imports speak language of hockey. Japanese players making impact on ice, by Shane Lance. When you think of hockey hotbeds, Japan is probably not the first place that comes to mind. For the North Iowa Bulls, though, the country has had a sizable impact on the team's 2020 success so far. Second-year Bulls player Soda Isogai was named the NA3HL West Division Star of the Week for the week of November 3rd after scoring 2 goals with 1 assist in the Bulls' record-setting 13-3 win over Wilmar on October 30th. Isogai, a native of Nagano, Japan, is tied with Garrett Freeman for the team lead with 6 goals this season. Isogai has been playing abroad for several years, with 2 seasons in Russia and 2 in Austria before coming to the United States. Aside from Isogai, the Bulls also have first-year forward Shota Kaneko of Tokyo on the roster. This season is Kaneko's first in the U.S. and after he spent last season as a member of Japan's U-20 team. Kaneko currently has 2 goals on the season, along with 3 assists. Isogai and Kaneko are not the first Japanese-born players to have suited up for the Bulls. Kohei Saito played for North Iowa for parts of 3 seasons from 2014 to 2017 before going on to play at the University of New Hampshire, becoming the first ever Japanese-born player to play Division I hockey. Quote, "We like the Japanese players in that they are smart hockey players," unquote, Bulls head coach Todd Sandin said earlier this season. Quote, "The first year is a bit of a language barrier, but the universal language of hockey is pretty transparent and easy for those guys to understand. We've been blessed to have some very good Japanese players in our program," unquote. With 1 year under his belt, Isogai has grown more comfortable in a Bulls uniform. His English has improved by a lot over last season, and he has turned into a key player for the team. Sandin was thrilled when Isogai announced he would be coming back and said that Isogai's return has been a big factor in the 9-3 Bulls' success this season. Quote, "Certainly, we are excited when the guys decide to come back, but with so many options and teams available at this level, and different countries at the Tier 2 level, it is never a given that guys are just going to return," Sandin said. "We were very excited when he decided to come back, and he had other options for sure. We've made him a captain here too. His return certainly is an important piece for our team," unquote. Isogai and the Bulls first connected at a tryout in Edina, Minnesota in 2019. After trying out for several teams in the NA3HL, Isogai made the choice to join the Bulls when he scored 22 goals in his first season in the States. After trying out for several teams in the NA3HL, Isogai made the choice to join the Bulls where he scored 22 goals in his first season in the States. Quote, "It's been kind of a lucky opportunity-based situation for us," Sandin said. "Soda came to us on a bit of a bluebird opportunity. A guy reached out, he tried out for a couple teams in our league, and ended up picking our team, which we are very thankful and fortunate for," unquote. Kaneko came to the Bulls through an advisor the team has worked with in the past and who helped the team acquire Saito several years ago. For both Isogai and Kaneko, the biggest adjustment between Japan and North Iowa has been the language, but both of them have been working hard to be able to communicate with their teammates. Quote, "Language is probably the biggest thing, and chemistry. Just getting to know each other is probably the hardest thing," unquote, forward Sean Sullivan said. Quote, "They're pretty quiet and shy, coming over here and not knowing anyone. We just talk to them and try to get to know them. Being the initiation to try to get to know them is the biggest thing," unquote. So far, the differences between Japan and Iowa seems to fall by the wayside once the pair step onto the ice. "Hockey in America is more physical than hockey in Japan," according to Isogai, but he and Kaneko have adjusted to it well. Quote, "Physicality certainly is a part of the game, and they have integrated into that part of the game seamlessly," Sandin said. "Shota initiates a lot of physicality when he is out there. He gets in quick on forechecks, and he separates guys from the puck with his body. We haven't seen any tentativeness. They both are able to handle the physical style of play that we play in," unquote. This season, Isogai has felt a lot more comfortable both on the ice and off. With his English skills improving and his body more adapted to American hockey, he has become a crucial part of the team's attack. Quote, "This year I have better English," unquote, Isogai said. Quote, "Everything is better. I'm more fast and more strong," unquote. But this year has been an especially strange one in the NA3HL hockey, with COVID-19 changing much of how the team goes about its day-to-day life. For foreign-born players, it can be an especially worrisome time as the pandemic continues to spread. Isogai says that his family hasn't expressed too much concern about the virus as the team is taking precautions. Quote, "A little bit worried, but I'm playing hockey," Isogai said. "It's fun," unquote. Once you look past the language, the hockey style, and the other cultural differences that exist between Japan and the United States, there's one thing that Isogai, Kaneko, and the American-born Bulls can all agree on. the glory of American cuisine. Quote, I like your food, Iso Guy said. I like hamburgers, unquote. The Bulls will play their next game on November 20th against New Ulm at Mason City Arena. Shane Lance covers sports for the Globe Gazette. Kipkemboi, NIAC men claim national title. Freshman's individual crown powers team. Betree second for women. With Shane Lance. The NIAC men's cross-country team finally did it. The 2020 Trojans are national champions. The Trojans went into the NJCAA Division II national meet on Saturday with some high hopes. Ranked number 2 in the country, the team entered as one of the favorites to win the whole thing, with number 1 ranked Cowley College and Allen County Community College the other two teams in the hunt for the championship. Thanks to a spectacular race from freshman Melvin Kipkemboi, the Trojans managed to pull it off. Kipkemboi finished the 8 kilometer with a time of 24:58, beating Cowley College number 1 Adrian Diaz Lopez by 3 seconds for the program's first ever individual national championship. His finish was only the second time in NIAC history that a runner finished an 8K in under 25 minutes, behind only Walcott, who ran a 24:49 in 2016. The title came at the end of a busy 2-week stretch for the Kenya-born freshman. On November 1st, Kipkemboi won the NJCAA Region 11 Division II title, the team's first regional title since 2011. On Friday night, he was named the USTF CCCA NJCAA Division II Central Region Athlete of the Year. Jorge Ruiz was the second NIAC runner to finish the race, placing 6th with a time of 25:39. Vicente Correa placed 11th overall at 26:29, and Jalen Peterson 12th at 26:33. All three were named NJCAA All-Americans. NIAC head coach Curtis Vaes didn't even know at first that the team had won the title, and only realized it once he saw Peterson react in front of the team results scoreboard. Quote, he started jumping up and down and going crazy, Vaes said in a NIAC press release. So then I knew that we had won the team title, unquote. The Trojans finished with 57 team points to clinch the championship, with Allen County Cross Country placing 2nd with 68 and Cowley College in 3rd at 70 points. Before Saturday, the highest the Trojans had ever placed at a national meet was 4th, which came in 2011. The title was the 3rd team championship in school history for any sport. The first came from the 1973 wrestling team, and the most recent was won by the 1995 men's basketball team. Quote, it feels good, Kipkemboi said in a release. This is just the beginning, unquote. NIAC women. Bertree finishes 2nd at national meet. NIAC freshman runner Sarah Bertree finished 2nd overall at the NJCAA Division II National Championship meet on Saturday with a 5-kilometer time of 18:33. It was the second time in school history that a NIAC women's runner finished 2nd at the national meet, with Anna Buninki also accomplishing the feat back in 2011, and was the best finish by a Trojans runner since Hannah Palmeter placed 3rd at nationals in 2014. Cowley College runner Lubna Swede came in just ahead of Bertree to claim the national title. The women's team finished 10th, the best national meet finish in program history. Cowley College won the team title with 68 points, while Heartland Community College was runner-up at 71. Shane Lance covers sports for the Globe Gazette. College men's basketball. Cyclones look for Bolton to step up. Iowa State hopes for big things from junior. By Ben Weiser. Rasir Bolton was a productive player for Iowa State last season. He averaged 14.7 points, 3.4 rebounds, and 2.8 assists. But coach Steve Prohm needs more from the junior. More in the leadership department with the departure of Tyrese Halliburton, more on the defensive side of the ball, and more as a true point guard. Quote, he has to jump into a leadership role, Prohm said. You jump into a leadership role by being an everyday guy. The guys who have been great leaders here and the guys that have really impacted this program were everyday guys. They were guys that did it right in the classroom, guys that did it right on the floor, guys that were in the gym constantly, guys that were watching film constantly, and then guys that were engaging, unquote. Bolton has examples to draw inspiration from. Last season, Halliburton, as a sophomore, was exactly what Prom looks for. Prom said Bolton has been in his office a lot since they've been able to return from quarantine to watch tape and try to be that, quote, everyday guy, unquote. That might be more important than ever this year with 7 new faces entering the mix. Quote, it definitely feels good to have that trust from your coach and having him believing in you, Bolton said. Our relationship is growing day by day. As far as a leadership role, I'm just trying to help out the young guys and new guys too, unquote. I'm just showing them that I'm not perfect, but you have to fight and be consistent every day no matter what. If you've had a bad day at practice, you have to get into the gym the next day and watch film with coach so you can continue to learn. The biggest thing is staying consistent, and even though I'm not perfect, I'm always there fighting. Defensively, the Cyclones will miss Halliburton, who had 54 steals in 22 games. Bolton had just 32 steals in 30 games, and Prom said he needs to take a step forward on the defensive end of the floor. Quote, the biggest challenge of taking the next step is he going to be dominant defensively, unquote, Prom said. Quote, can he be dominant defensively and take on the other team's best guard? If we're playing Baylor, can he say, hey, coach, I want Jared Butler or Macchio Teague? He has to want that. He has to be excited for that, and it has to drive him. He has to challenge himself on the defensive side of the floor, unquote. It's unfair to ask Bolton to be Halliburton, who will likely be a lottery pick on Wednesday in the NBA draft, but Bolton can use Halliburton as an example. One of the most impressive parts of Halliburton's game was his distributing. Halliburton averaged 6.5 assists last season, and his assist-to-turnover ratio was 2.3-1. Quote, it'll definitely help a lot just having experience with playing point guard and learning from Tyrese last year and taking notes from him, unquote, Bolton said. Bolton has had an assist-to-turnover ratio of 0.75-1. If Bolton is going to be the point guard, he needs to improve that number. Quote, if you're going to be an elite point guard, and we've been blessed to have several of them over the years, you have to put yourself in position to be a 3-1 assist-to-turnover ratio guy, Prom said. That comes from making great decisions, playing off 2 feet, and making sure you have the right guy, unquote. I think he's made strides, but now it's go time, and now we're full go, and he has to take the next step. Area athletes to be inducted into IHSAA Hall of Fame by Gunnar Davis. The Iowa High School Athletic Association announced its 2020 Football Hall of Fame inductees on Monday afternoon. Of the 5 honorees, 2 are former North Iowa standouts. Ryan Hannum from St. Ansgar and Kevin Sanger from Britt, West Hancock, will be inducted at halftime of the Class 4A state championship game on Friday. Hannum was a 4-year starter at St. Ansgar in the mid to late 90s. He still holds the career receiving yards record and was the first rusher in program history to surpass 1,000 yards in a season. He went on to become a 4-year letter winner at tight end for the University of Northern Iowa and played 5 years in the National Football League. Sanger helped lead 2 teams to runner-up finishes in 1986 and 1987 under his father Bob's coaching. He earned first-team All-State in both his junior and senior seasons. He went on to become an all-conference player for Central College. NEIC update. Northeast Iowa Conference mandates masks at sporting events. The Northeast Iowa Conference, home to Charles City, voted unanimously to require face coverings of all indoor sporting events this winter. Superintendents, athletic directors, coaches, and student athletes are putting out the message to wear masks. Quote, this procedure helps keep our students and spectators safe while allowing them the best opportunity to support their student athletes in person, unquote, a press release stated. Quote, limiting access to games is another solution if fans are not able to properly wear face coverings, unquote. The new rule applies to both middle school and high school events. Face coverings should be worn the entire time fans are in the building, according to the release. It must cover the mouth and the nose. If fans do not adhere to the rule, they may be asked to leave. Gunnar Davis covers education and sports. And that does it for today's reading of the Globe Gazette for November 17th, 2020. I'm your reader, Anna. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.
This is Tom Hatton with an Irish short take from the book entitled A Culinary History of Iowa. And this article, actually it says chapter 2, is entitled Immigrants Influence Iowa's Food Traditions. Hundreds of thousands of pioneers and immigrants from many parts of Europe and beyond flocked to Iowa in the 19th and early 20th centuries in search of a better life, whether that meant economic opportunity, religious freedom, or the chance to create a utopian society. These newcomers brought a variety of unique food traditions with them and transformed Iowa's culinary history. Some immigrants, like the French Icarians, were motivated by ideological ideals when they settled in America. The new state of Iowa, specifically Adams County, became the promised land for French men and women pursuing their dream to create a communal utopian society where everyone was equal. By some accounts, their Icaria colony in southwest Iowa was the longest existing non-religious, purely communal experiment in American history. The first Icarian party arrived in Iowa in 1852. They purchased about 3,000 acres of land from the United States government at $1.25 per acre to build their new colony near Corning. Living conditions in the untamed lands of southwest Iowa were often harsh. Log houses, some without wood floors or windows, were the French settlers' only shelter against the brutal winter. Most of the Icarians' land was unfenced, unbroken prairie, and there was not one settler along the trail before they reached Icaria, according to some reports. Supplies for the colony often had to be hauled overland for hundreds of miles. Only a few basic ingredients, including milk, butter, cornbread, and bacon, formed the daily menu. As a communal society, the Icarians worked together on the farms and ate together in a communal dining hall, where evening meals were sometimes followed by music or lectures, spoken in French. Little by little, living conditions in the colony improved as the Icarians managed to establish a fairly successful agricultural enterprise. When wool prices skyrocketed with the outbreak of the Civil War, the Icarians thrived by selling wool and other supplies to the Union Army. While the war ended in 1865, trouble was brewing in the Icaria colony by the 1870s. Much of the conflict revolved around little gardens, according to an April 1921 article in the Iowa History Journal, The Pelham Pest. Earlier in the history of the Icarian community in Iowa, each family had been permitted to cultivate a little garden around their log house where flowers might be raised. Some families had planted vines and even fruit trees. Now that these plants were bearing fruit, the more radical members of the colony could not tolerate this violation of their rules against private property. The possessors of the gardens, however, clung to their little plots of ground. It wasn't much, but it was theirs. The authorities tried to settle the quarrel with a compromise. As each family moved from their log house to a new frame house, their little garden was to be given up. There would be no simple resolution to this dispute, however, which triggered open hostilities. The radicals claimed that the community had violated its constitution and announced their intent to withdraw. They also advocated an aggressive style of communism and appealed to a circuit court to revoke the charter granted to the community in 1860 on the grounds that Icaria was really a communist establishment instead of an agricultural society, as the Articles of Incorporation provided. By 1879, a group of younger progressive colony members had split from the older, more conservative members. This marked the beginning of the end for the Icarians' utopian experiment in Iowa. In 1898, members voted to end the colony. By then, it consisted mostly of elders who could no longer continue the hard work of operating the colony. The Icarian movement in America was over. The legacy of the Icarian movement endures, however. The French Icarian Colony Board of Trustees was formed in recent years and has been rebuilding the French Icarian village on a portion of original Icarian land east of Corning. The 1878 refectory, communal dining hall, and 1860 one-room Icaria school have been restored for tours and research. History comes to life at the French Icarian village through events like the annual Fête de Mai, Festival of Corn, which is held in the fall. The original Fête de Mai was a celebration held by the Icarians each fall after all the crops were harvested. The feast was served in the communal dining hall to everyone who came to help on the final day of corn harvest. In late September 2015, the Cresta News Advertiser promoted the French Icarian village's fourth annual Fête de Mai, which included a four-course French supper featuring flavors of the Alsace region. It's a modern taste of the French Icarian's quest for utopia in Iowa. And that was an excerpt from A Culinary History of Iowa by Darcy Doherty Malsey, and other offbeat stuff by Eric Jones, Dan Coffey, and Barrett Thorkelson.